Brown County is among health departments in the northeastern part of the state in recent days to issue a public health emergency alert due to the rapid spread of COVID-19 cases and rising hospitalizations and deaths. We're zooming in on Brown County here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In a letter sent Friday, more than 200 doctors urged residents and elected officials to take steps to contain the explosion of cases in the county that is pushing local hospitals to the brink. Are you a healthcare worker in Green Bay or the Fox Valley? What are you facing? Does your facility have enough PPE? Do you feel safe at work? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Paul Casey is an emergency medicine specialist in Green Bay and the medical director for Bellin Health Emergency Services. Dr. Casey, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, what does the situation look like in your ER now? What are you facing?
So I'll talk about the county as a whole, because we're all facing the same thing. I just got off a 7 o'clock. It's called the HERC, Hospital Emergency Response Council. The state is divided up into multiple regions. Our region includes Brown County. So we're all facing the same thing. In my particular hospital, our COVID unit is 100% full. Our COVID ICU is 100% over their capacity. And we have a 5-stage surge contingency plan. Today, we're having to shift into red, which is crisis mode, which means we're having to limit elective surgeries because of the remarkable rise in COVID admissions over the past 3 weeks.
What is going on? What is causing this?
To be quite simple, a blatant disregard for following public safety measures. We thought we'd dodge the bullet. People had a desire to return to normalcy. We started to see an uptick, and particularly in the rural areas, the farther north one goes in Wisconsin, the less people believe this disease is real and that they could get it or a family member could get it. The trend we're seeing now is that people wanted to return to normalcy. They had a patient yesterday who was very sick, but not sick enough to be in the hospital. I said, "Where did you get it?" And she said, "Well, I went out to dinner with 7 friends. 6 of us got it." There are large gatherings, county fairs, that type of thing. Nobody wears a mask. In one county, Shawano County, which is the adjacent county to Brown County, there's been remarkable public resistance to wearing a mask because they say it infringes on their constitutional rights, and public health be damned, we're going to do whatever we want. That's what's driving this remarkable surge.
When you say you're moving to red crisis mode, what does that mean for staff? How does that crisis mode work?
So what it means is we have to look at our normal hospital operations. And for example, until today, we had still been doing all of our elective surgeries because we have to take care of people who, for example, you have cancer, you need the cancer surgery. We can't stop taking care of those people. On the other hand, if you have a hip that's worn out and need a hip replacement, that's not an emergency. So we're having to look at postponing those surgeries to accommodate COVID patients. So that's what crisis mode means. It means we stopped taking care of our usual patients. We had to do this in the first wave back in March and April. We essentially shut down everything in anticipation of seeing, we plan to have 50 patients on a ventilator in my hospital, which has 160 beds, because we saw what was happening in New York City and New Orleans, and we thought that was going to come to us. Fortunately, we dodged a bullet. The maximum number of patients we had in April in our hospital was COVID was 20. Today, we're double that at 40. In addition to taking care of everybody else who needs to come to the hospital, heart attacks, trauma victims, that type thing. So that's what crisis mode means. It means we have to suspend normal operations to accommodate critically ill patients.
How safe are healthcare workers staying? I've learned here that there's been a pretty big exposure that 150 Bellin employees are out of work in quarantine, according to the Green Bay Press Gazette.
Actually, today it's 190. 190 today. So those are all exposures outside the hospital. The hospital is probably one of the safest places to be because we wear PPE. We have adequate PPE. We're protected. I've been wearing a surgical mask and an N95 when I see a COVID patient for 6 months, and I have not gotten infected on the job. So the exposure to healthcare workers is occurring outside the workplace. And unfortunately, if they're exposed or get the virus, they're off work. And that's the other part of the problem that, you know, even if we have hospital beds, we need to be able to staff those beds to take care of our patients. And to have 190 workers home on quarantine is alarming.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Casey, who is an emergency medicine specialist in Green Bay for Bellin Health Emergency Services. We're finding out how his county, his hospital, is responding to the surge in COVID patients. Taking your questions as well, do you live in the Fox Valley region? Are you wearing masks? Do you feel safe as COVID cases continue to rise? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You have a outpatient respiratory clinic. What does that currently look like in terms of people using the clinic?
We are directing patients there in an attempt to cohort patients with respiratory symptoms. A couple reasons for that. Number one, it limits the number of staff we expose to respiratory illness, and it allows us to rapidly evaluate those patients and get them to emergency department if they need a higher level of care. So we're trying to do that, and all health systems in Brown County, I believe, are doing the same thing. We're trying to cohort those patients in a single location to, for example, you don't want a patient with COVID coming and sitting in the waiting room of the regular clinic where people are coming in for their routine health care, which we absolutely do not want to have to limit during this spike. We want to continue normal operations. During the first spike, what we saw was people couldn't come in for the routine screenings, their mammograms, their colonoscopies, and we can't do that again because we have to take care of the population.
Where are you at with ventilators? Because when we spoke with you 6 months ago, you were really concerned about the use of ventilators in treating COVID patients. Has that changed at all?
It actually has changed remarkably. So early on in the pandemic, we thought we were going to need a lot of ventilators, and it turns out putting people on a ventilator with severe COVID pneumonia is the wrong thing to do. This is a different disease than other respiratory illnesses, so what we've always done in emergency departments and ICU settings for people who have a low oxygen level, we put them on it's called a non-rebreather mask, and we dial that up to 15 liters a minute. And if their oxygen level stays low, that's the point you intubate them or put them on a ventilator. So that was done. All those images you saw in the first wave of the pandemic, that's why that was happening. It turned out that putting somebody on a ventilator, it actually worsened their course of illness. So we've learned that we have other means to take care of the oxygen requirements, including something called high-flow nasal cannula. You can put somebody on a high-flow device, dial it up to 60 liters a minute, and that is more effective than putting somebody on a ventilator. So the number of ventilators we need is very small, and we have enough capacity to handle ventilator patients. Those patients are at the last stage of their disease, and most of them don't survive.
We've seen a number of experimental treatments here, especially in treating President Trump's COVID-19 regimen. Where are you at with the experimental treatments, the antibody cocktails, the remdesivir?
So we have three treatments that we use on hospitalized COVID patients. We have dexamethasone, which was shown in a very large trial called the Recovery Trial done at Oxford University to improve the outcome in patients who have an oxygen requirement. So that's proven. We have another drug called remdesivir, which we're using under emergency use authorization. It's an antiviral medication. That's shown to have benefit as well. The third thing we have available to everybody is called convalescent plasma. That means we take a patient who's had COVID, they give blood, we concentrate the plasma, which contains antibodies against the coronavirus. What President Trump received the concept is you manufacture the antibodies that are identical to what you'd have in convalescent plasma, and you give those antibodies. That's called a monoclonal antibody. What the president received is not available to anybody else in the country. He had to get what's called a compassionate use authorization, typically used for people who are on the cancer patient. There's a drug that just started being tested for a particular condition. That particular drug that he received, if I understand correctly, is in phase 1 clinical trials, which means you're doing what's called a randomized double-blind study, where you take 50% of the population, you give them the experimental treatment, you give the other half placebo, the patient or the physician doesn't know which one they get, and then you measure the outcome. Did more people who received the experimental drug have a better outcome than the placebo patients? And that's the science we need to effectively say this drug works for this disease. That's why we stopped using hydroxychloroquine. Back in early part of the pandemic in March and April, we were giving people hydroxychloroquine, even on an emergency use authorization. And then a number of randomized trials came out that showed it absolutely doesn't work. So we stopped using it. The FDA withdrew their emergency use authorization.
We're talking with emergency medicine specialist Paul Casey. He's medical director for Belen Health Emergency Services in Green Bay. Have you been treated at a hospital recently? What safety precautions did you find in place? How has COVID affected your family, your community? How is your business or industry responding to the spread? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this in a minute with Dr. Paul Casey here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Green Bay emergency medicine physician Paul Casey. According to the Department of Health Services, Brown County has had 10,482 COVID cases since the pandemic started, including 69 deaths. The virus has infected 4% of Brown County's population at this point, and hospitals are at a tipping point. Let's bring in Jennifer now in Appleton. Hi, Jennifer. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you for this program. My question regards non-emergency medical appointments in the Fox Valley, like a physical examination. Would the doctor recommend that people who have non-emergency medical appointments, like physical exams, scheduled, that they perhaps postpone them later, or if he recommends that it's safe to go ahead with the physical exam, what are the precautions he would recommend for the healthcare workers and the facility in which the people have to go in for these exams? And
Jennifer, thank you. Yeah, Dr. Casey.
So currently, we're at all major health systems. I'm currently working at ThetaCare Medical Center out in Shawano. I, in addition to working for Bell, and I work for the ThetaCare system. So all healthcare systems are continuing normal operations on the outpatient basis. It's completely safe to go in for a doctor appointment because, as I mentioned earlier, we're cohorting the COVID patients. We have capacity. All our clinics are open in most health systems in the state. So if you have, I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow, I'm going. The key is that you have to wear a mask and the healthcare providers in the clinic have to wear a mask. So it's currently safe to go in for routine schedule appointments, and we encourage people to do that.
Jennifer, thank you for that call. Let's bring in someone from now the Fox Valley. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. My wife and I took all precautions. We sanitized. We wore masks. We social distanced. We both still had it and been down for a couple of weeks. We both got a minor symptoms, but enough where it was the fatigue and total loss of smell type of thing. So we don't want to reveal who we are because of the HIPAA laws. But the other thing is there's so little testing in the Fox Valley, and the government website to tell you where testing has a lot of broken links in it. So it hit here, and we weren't ready for it. And I'd like to have that addressed so that when these things do happen, that the government and the local medical facilities are better prepared. So I went to go for a testing site. I would have had to drive, you know, about 40 minutes in any direction to go. And, you know, I live in the Fox Valley. There should be more of them, like in the Appleton, Little Chute, Menasha, all that type of thing. Just sort of nothing in any of those places. Mm-hmm. One in Nina and one in, like, DePere, and that was it. So I'll take my comments.
Yeah. Dr. Casey, the need for testing and available testing close by.
So a huge problem. On my call that I referenced earlier, it's called the HERC call, Hospital Emergency Response Council. We talked about that this morning. We're not getting the testing supplies we need from the federal government. So this has been elevated to the state level for our state representatives to push the government to give us the testing we need.
When you look at the percent of confirmed COVID-19 cases by age group, a quarter of cases, 25%, are age 20 to 29. I'm wondering, is this the age group that is presenting in your ERs?
Absolutely not. Those people, they usually don't even get sick, but they go home and they infect their parents and grandparents, who then get very, very sick. And so I have not admitted a patient under the age of 30. Early on in the pandemic in March, we had one woman who was 29 who was pregnant, who unfortunately died from COVID. But the vast majority of young people, they either get very mild symptoms or no symptoms at all. The problem is they take it home to family, and that's the current theme we're seeing. The daily report I get about people who are admitted, we try to determine the contact they had that gave them the disease, and that's almost always the case during our current huge spike. A family member visited, they think, my grandson's coming to visit, no big deal, I know him, he's been safe, he didn't wear a mask, and gives it to grandma. Grandma has to be hospitalized.
We're talking with emergency medicine physician Paul Casey. He's medical director for Bellin Health Emergency Services in Green Bay, also working with the Theta Care system. Dr. Casey, you mentioned contact tracing. Do you find that there is enough contact tracing to go around in your region? What do you see?
No, that was addressed on the 7 o'clock meeting today. Brown County Public Health doesn't have the capability to do adequate contact tracing. So what they have to do as of today, they try to contact the patient who tests positive and then ask that person to notify all their contacts. So we do not have adequate contact tracing capability.
So basically they're farming out that job to the person who's been infected?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I want to talk about the nursing staff here for a moment. At Bellin, they sent out a message a week ago saying, we pride ourselves on the quality of care we provide. We thrive on it. It keeps us going when things are tough, and being overwhelmed with critically ill COVID patients will take away our ability to provide this high level of care. What is morale like on your staff?
Unfortunately, it's dropping. I worked at Bellin over the weekend, and I had a hallway conversation with our nursing supervisor, who mentioned to me that the people in the ICU and on the COVID ward they're getting fatigued. It's hard to wear a PAPR, which is a protective device, for 12 hours. Your eyes dry out. You can't eat or drink very often. So people are getting fatigued, and we're not even at the height of this current wave. So it's a problem. We're doing everything we can as a health system to support them, to try to keep morale up, but people are getting fatigued.
Let's bring in Greg now, joining us from Fond du Lac. Greg, hi.
Hi. I just have a question because a number of school districts decided to open up the schools this year, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of correlation where there's a conduit of kids coming to school and an increase in those areas where schools are open versus the ones that decided to remain shut down and do total virtual.
We don't think that the schools have been a big conduit for the community spread. There have been a handful of cases. We did have an unfortunate case where a teacher in the Howard Suamico School District died from COVID, but it was believed that she contracted that at a funeral. The problem is that, kids can transmit the virus. And the Howard Suamico School District actually did a fantastic job. They we worked with them to develop a plan to keep their students masked, socially distanced, and the ones that did open up took proper precautions, but because of the increase in community spread, they've had to close down again.
Well, let's take our last minute or so to, remind us what we can do to help reduce the spread. It's mask wearing, but it goes beyond that as well.
Right. So I think the biggest thing people need to understand is that everyone can get this disease. And just because your sister, who doesn't live in your house, doesn't have any symptoms, it's not safe to go out to lunch with your sister and sit without a mask across the table because she could have it. That's the biggest thing we're seeing, is that people think, I don't have any symptoms, so I don't have to worry about this. The mask is the single most important thing we can do to help stop the spread of this virus. And we have to do that even when connecting with close family and close friends. An example is we had two nurses carpooling, and neither one of them had symptoms, so neither one of them wore a mask. One was asymptomatic and gave it to the other one. Now we have two nurses on quarantine. So that's the thing people need to understand, that somebody in your family or close social network cannot have COVID symptoms, have the virus, give it to you, and then you spread it to somebody else.
Dr. Casey, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for helping us spread the message.
Dr. Paul Casey is an emergency medicine specialist in Green Bay, medical director for Bellin Health Emergency Services. Just ahead, we talk with two political reporters about President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis and what they're hearing from his doctors and White House officials. And your reaction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.